Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Opinion Line. Cork's 96 FM.
I want to start the program this morning by highlighting the tremendous work of a Corkman in the UK. His name is James Chisholm, and he runs a boxing gym called The Locker Room in Southend, near London. And grew up in Toker, but he's been there now for 20 years or more, and he's raising his own kids there and whatever. But he's doing remarkable work to try to keep youngsters away from a life of crime and a life of gangs and a life of knives. And I heard about him a little while back and got the chance to catch up with him last evening.
James, your name came up, suggested to us, in fact, by a listener when we were discussing crime and young people and knives and gangs a number of weeks ago. It was good to get a chance to chat with you. Originally from Toker, based in Essex for quite a number of years, you run a gym, boxing club over there, and you have a passion, I think, for leading young lads away from a life of crime, or at least trying to. Where did that interest come from, James?
Well, I suppose it's something I kind of fell into, really. I mean, I didn't plan on, say, opening up. I mean, I didn't really know my location as such. When I opened up a gym in Southend in Essex, I've seen so much of an increase, really, in crime, and especially knife and violent crime, over the last 20 years, over the 20 years I've been there. It was like a totally different town, to be honest, 20 years ago. And year by year, things have got worse and worse. And I think London is spreading out, and it's just a big influx of kind of county line drug crime and violent crime. And things have just got, I mean, the statistics are worrying. Don't know what it's like in Cork myself over there, but yeah, the numbers aren't looking good.
No, they're not looking good here at all. We have a really serious problem with the possession of knives, the carrying of knives in the city, and some people say it's just waiting to explode. You have seen firsthand the impact, haven't you?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, where we're located, we're right in the train station, actually, in Southend, so we're literally in the middle of the county lines. And unfortunately, only last weekend, and it was all over the news over here, but we had a 17-year-old boxer that was stabbed at 5 o'clock in broad daylight. And he unfortunately died, and obviously the investigation is ongoing.
One of your own lads, was it?
He boxed in a neighbouring club, actually. That was just a couple of miles away from us. But yeah, he's a neighbour of ours, basically. 17 years old, I mean. And the kid that done it was only young.
And that's two lives gone and two families ruined. And
yeah, it's very, very, very sad. And, you think your kids are safe, but 5 o'clock in the afternoon, you worry about them if you're picking them up from a nightclub when you get a bit older, but you think they'd be safe at 5 o'clock in broad daylight, you know?
Yeah. Now, I'll get to the amnesty and the idea you had for it in a while, but growing up in Cork, like, your own experience of growing up.
Yes, when I said growing up, I always feel I was really in a lucky situation that I was obviously always into boxing from a very, very young age. So I felt like, I was just guided and mentored and kind of empowered, really, and inspired by people around me to want to do better. I've always set goals and always wanted to achieve them, and I was just lucky at that, really. I mean, obviously the influence was around me. I think it's around everybody, really, and, but I managed to stick on the right track, and it's one of the lucky ones.
Boxing's an amazing sport that way, isn't it? Particularly young lads getting involved in amateur boxing. Huge tradition, as you know, in Cork. It's very good for young lads, isn't it? Why is that?
And I think as well as, it's the areas. I mean, when you grow up in nice places, boxing clubs aren't that accessible, you know, and the same for kids that come from maybe poverty or disadvantaged areas. They only know boxing gyms. They only know, you know, tough sports. They don't get, I mean, tennis and golf is inaccessible, isn't it, in rough areas. And
how did you get involved in boxing first?
I suppose back then, you know, when we were young and back when we started in Talker Boxing Club, I mean, there was a boxing club, I guess, 500 yards everywhere you went, wasn't there, in Cork City back, you know, even back 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So it was there, and that's what the kids did, you know, the kids from the estates, we went boxing. It was, yeah. You know, we played Gaelic games, it was one of the two, but the GAA was always a bit too tough for me, so boxing was easy.
You could get away. GAA was too tough, but boxing was easy. People talk about it being a rough sport, but it's actually a sport that teaches you huge discipline, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're told to hit when you have to hit. You're told to stop when you got to stop. You know, I mean, that's control. That's discipline. That takes a lot of, you know, years of mentoring and proper coaching. 100%. Yeah.
And one of the great things about it is it does keep fellas, young lads, on the straight and narrow. It keeps them, or helps at least, yeah, helps them to avoid getting into gang culture and stuff like that. Why do you think that is, James?
I think as well, it's been around, I mean, going to a boxing gym, you're around kind of like-minded people who, you know, there's more opportunities there for them, you know, and it's just giving that, like when you're around kids that of the same, the more you want to be pushed, you want to be, you know, you're motivated, you're inspired, you're empowered. And the hub, you know, like a boxing gym, the coaches and the trainers, they're like a father figure to some of these kids, you know. I mean, I know more about the kids' home lives that come down my gym than their own parents, you know? You know, the old saying, kids in sports, stay out of court, is like, you know, giving kids that opportunity and trying to ensure that the right people are there to push them forward. They don't want to see, you know, guys in a shirt and tie or the probation officer or the, you know, the people ticking boxes. They want to see the coach. They want to see, we're like physical counsellors, you know?
It's a very good way of putting it. So, come back to Knives and that awful experience there just recently now of the lad that you knew of. Do you know, when a young man reaches a point in his teens where he joins a gang and picks up a knife for the first time, you've probably studied what pushes young lads that way. What is it?
It's difficult, isn't it? It's the, you know, the want the fitting in, isn't it? And, I mean, it's as well as the fear factor. I think a lot of the kids, they feel like they simply have to carry a knife to defend themselves. You know, it's not the fact that they want to go out to hurt somebody or to get hurt themselves, because they really know the outcome and what's going to happen. But it's that fear factor. I mean, the biggest problem we have really in Essex here is the county line drug gangs. I mean, very high profile drug gangs. I've had like 9-year-old kids, as young as 9, that have been referred to me, you know, to try and like literally safeguard them, really. Is the boxing is almost there as a last resort, but, you know, the councils are that desperate that they're referring these young kids to me to try and, you know, to try and save them from the gangs.
At 9, they're in gangs.
9 years old. That's the youngest. When they rang me, I just couldn't believe the age, but they're 9 and they're carrying the weapons and drugs and money. So they're sent on the trains. But the reason why they're carrying a weapon is because if they lose the drugs, they lose the money that they're handing off, they can't go back to the gangs. So there is so much in fear of losing the drugs, losing the money, because the gangs have infiltrated them in that way that they're carrying, because, you know, they're willing to do anything to stop the drugs and the money getting taken from them.
What kind of a sick individual puts a 9-year-old child in that position?
It's a horrible food chain. It's a very horrible food chain. I mean, there's lots of big police things going on over here in Essex with all the drug cartels and that. But it's very, very sick. A 9-year-old child. Yeah.
9-year-old kid. And like, I mean, I obviously wouldn't want you to be identifying anybody, but I mean, how does it happen that a 9-year-old ends up with a knife in his hand collecting money for drugs?
But it goes down the chain. I mean, that these kids are the kids that you think are safe, you know, down the local park, mixing, you know, even during lockdown and stuff like that, mixing with other kids. And there's then youths, maybe 15, 16-year-olds that are there put in place to basically recruit these younger kids, because these younger kids won't get stopped generally on the trains, or, you know, they get away with passing the drugs around easier. So they literally just infiltrate. They're set recruiters sent into these local parks to recruit these young kids at the youngest age.
Is it the dream of money in your pocket?
Yeah, I mean, they're very well rewarded, but obviously what comes with big rewards is big risks. Once they're in, they put the fear in someone, and the kids, obviously, it's just impossible to leave, isn't it? Like, it's like any drug, you want the bigger things, and that's exactly what being in any gang is going to lead to.
And is there a thing that, you know, a harmless bunch of young lads who just, say, hang around in a park, kicking a ball or just playing around, doing harmless things, they're targeted as a group to bring them all in?
They're targeted in terms of, you know, I think there's a million and one reasons, but I think like any group of young lads, someone wants to be the big boy, someone wants to be the leader of the gang, so there's always that one kid, you know, that wants to put himself forward, isn't there? Always a class clown, always there. But, you know.
Will he be the guy who first brings the knife?
Yes, yeah.
Is there always one that starts?
There is always one, because I mean, I know from even from nice areas and nice towns where, you know, where I was even kind of 10 miles away from the towns that were bad now we're seeing, I mean, we've had some other knife incidents around Christmas and New Year, literally around the block from me. And these things are pushing out, you know what I mean, further and further into the suburbs and into these areas. And it's getting deeper and deeper, which is very, very worrying. I've got three young kids myself, you know, and that's the reason why I'm just playing my part and doing the best I can do, because, you know, you want to leave the towns and the places in a better situation for them, don't you, than what, you know.
This kind of thing where adults look at youngsters in gangs and they think, shit, they're harmless, they're not doing any harm. But there's something that the older generation doesn't see, because it's well hidden from them, isn't there?
Yeah, we don't see. And to be honest, I'm always very, very surprised sometimes when, you know, there's a lad comes into the gym and then someone will, you know, notify me and say, oh, so, you know, this is Southend's most prolific, blah, blah, blah. And sometimes, sometimes I don't see it myself. And I think it's one of those things you'd always find hard, you know, anything can surprise you these days. And they're the kids sometimes that, you know, will get away with it, I guess, because they're the kids not playing up. They're making good money, they're living their life, and they're keeping their heads down and getting on with it, which is, they're the crafty ones, yeah.
So how did you come to the point where you came up with the knife amnesty idea? Like, first of all, where did it come from? But what was the motivation to try to do it, besides your own kids?
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The motivation really was, I guess, I mean, we looked at how, I mean, like I said, I'm on the train station, so it's an everyday occasion that the transport police are sealing off areas and that are pulling into the car park in the gym. And you see a lot going on where I am, so yeah. We started off with some community projects, and actually we started off in some schools doing a behavioural management program to try and nip things in the bud, you know. So we were sending trainers out to schools and helping some of the schools with some behavioural management by literally running, you know, boxing and activity programs and after school clubs. And from there, really, you know, you found out that was always the kind of the one or two worst kids that were kind of dragging the things down, which obviously had a bit more serious intentions. So we decided just to go bigger with the project, and we got involved with the we contacted like the Essex Police and the youth defending services in the local areas, and just kind of combined to share information and to get this project going. It's called Cowards Carry Knives, and knives, you know, knives down, gloves up. One of them started in London that was similar, and yeah, we just went from there really, and we seen what they had put in place.
And what was it? Come and hand in the knife, no questions asked.
The actual amnesty itself, yeah, like the knife bin as such that the police put there. I mean, that is just another, you know, another small piece of what we're, it's a way of reaching out really. So doing that through local media and newspapers was we were offering a free gym membership to the kids, because some of the kids that I look after that are, you know, in the worst situation, that come from domestic abuse, and, you know, they could never pay me gym membership anyway. And being a bit of a soft, well, at the beginning I said being a bit of a soft touch, but as I said, these kids, you know, this was their only safe haven. They were going back to this, you know, these houses full of domestic abuse. And so I did literally come up with this thing, like, you know, we all have to pay it forward. So basically I come up with a system that we would just roll out with, if they, you know, any kids handed in a knife, they would receive a gym membership. And it was a way of just trying to get them on the referral schemes and trying to safeguard them, because we run other projects through the club. So it was just a reach out really, another shout out to try and get the, just try and, yeah, bring in their knife.
And did you notice that some of them came and got rid of the knife because of the offer of the membership?
Yeah, they had to come and see me personally. Yeah, they had to come and see me personally to do that. And we put them on a referral scheme. How long are we running? Obviously, we've been locked down for the last year, but it was going for about 16, 18 months. I had seven lads that had come forward, seven different lads. I mean, and three of them actually went on to represent us, like to kind of to fight for the club and to, you know, so we've done really well with a handful of them lads.
And do they talk to you about making that choice and why they made that choice?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, geez, I mean, we have to think with me sometimes. I don't get to sleep because I come home from the gym sometimes at 10 o'clock and I'm thinking, oh, where's so-and-so? You know, he's gone off. I haven't seen him in a few weeks. But, you know, because I've gone off the radar a little bit. And you genuinely worry about the kids, so... You know, I always throw them a text or a message, especially even now the last year in lockdown. I've met a few of the lads down the seafront, and I just to stay in touch with them, just to keep them on track, and to, lads, you know, the gym's back soon, we're back open. So just trying to stay in touch, trying to keep everyone together and trying, you know, because that's the thing, isn't it? Is that when they're not around them, people, when that integration isn't there and they're not around like-minded people, they fall back into old ways, you know.
And do they appreciate that there's a thing, as you, I'm sure you know, or you've heard of it, James, called the one good adult. Be the one good adult in a kid's life. You make a huge difference. So are you kind of the one good adult in these lads' lives? And do they appreciate it? Do they appreciate the text at 10:30 at night?
I know that some people do take the pee a little bit with the system and with some of the projects, and some are referred on the projects because they really need to just tick the boxes and they don't want to be there. But look, that's life, isn't it? You're going to win some and lose some. As long as you know you're doing the best you can, and sometimes you got to reach out, and some people just need that extra push as well, you know, or maybe we're not their light bulb. And I bring in, if I feel as a better person to work with that person, and, you know, whether that be like male or female, or then I look to try and get the right person, and, you know, the right person wearing the shoes of that person. It's, you know, there's someone for everyone.
It must be very rewarding to see a lad that was headed the wrong way.
Yeah, certainly. And I mean, I know we probably, you know, we lose more than we gain, like in terms of trying to change people's lives. But the few that we do, yeah, certainly, it is very rewarding. Very rewarding because, yeah, you look at them, and even just looking at them, you know, even people that I haven't seen in a number of years, and they've turned their lives around. And sometimes, you know, I just check them out on social media. I just seen them clean cut, you know, wearing nice clothes, having it, holding down a job. That they're the rewarding things, you know, that they become a man, that they're actually going to work 9 to 5. They're the things that please me, you know.
Yeah.
That they got a future. There's a future there for them. And they've taken an opportunity and they've rode with the opportunity. That's life, isn't it?
And that may well have come from knives down, gloves up.
Well, we're all part and parcel. I think every business can play a part, you know, regardless of what you want to call it and regardless of what business you run, whether it's an office thing where, you know, there's big incentives going forward with mental health. And over here, I know that everything works differently, but the government are offering all these apprenticeship schemes to businesses to try and take younger kids on, and everyone can play their part. You know, if you just, you know, if just with one person, there is things there, and we just got to, everybody in the community has got to play a part, I think. You know, it's not up to the boxing coaches or the trainers or the hubs of the community. Everybody can play a part.
Being a parent yourself has been a real motivator for this, hasn't it, though?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, three young kids that are now, you know, 11, 13, 14, they're all going into teenagers. So
they're at the age where they would be prey for some of these gangs.
Certainly, and I'm well aware of that. And I'm listening, asking them, trying to make them accountable. You know, will you be playing with? Where are you going? The usual. Well, you'd like to think the usual is the usual parenting stuff, but I'd rather play bad cop than good cop. You know, they can hate me for it for a few years, but I'd rather them get to an age where they think, oh, actually, you know, dad was right, or dad was only looking out for us.
I'm not necessarily your friend, I'm your dad.
Exactly.
Yeah. There's probably people listening to us, James, who are worried about not just a teenager, but worried about a 6, 7, and 8-year-old.
Yeah, and it's getting younger.
What's ahead of them in 5 years? What advice would you have for parents?
It's the influence, isn't it? And I think, you know, now with social media, things are so accessible, you know, from online bullying to, I mean, you know, one of my kids, I had a bit of an issue with him with being besotted about, you know, likes and followers and, oh, dad, with this and that, and, you know, on Instagram and blah, blah, blah. And I got so many likes and followers. But the kids have grown up with this, you know, this belief that they have, how they're viewed and how they're, you know, there's no self-love there, isn't it? They feel like they've got to have all this influence around them to feel like they're somebody, to feel like they have an identity. So their identity is on like social media, and you know, all these like real life skills are missing, aren't they? And that's why again, things like with sport and getting kids into, like trying to identify what your kids' hobbies and interests are from a very young age. And then basically, like I was just saying to you actually on the call earlier about, you know, the kid, I was trying to find to get on the Zoom call, but the kids are all on football, you know, mastery things and dance lessons and whatever. I mean, I'm well aware that's not accessible to everyone, but it's trying to push your kids to trying to basically grasp as many interests and hobbies as you can from an early age, you know, to keep them busy and to keep them, you know, knowing you've done your best, really. And that's all you can do, isn't it?
Yeah, it's your job in a way, isn't it?
Yes, definitely. Setting boundaries, and of course it is, you know, just trying to find a balance. But it is a very, very tough one for kids, and it's getting younger. I mean, these kids are 8 or 9 wanting to be men now, you know. There's no childhood anymore, is there?
Yeah, they grow up too fast. It's true.
And it's going to get faster. They're given a phone when they're, you know, they're playing on mommy and daddy's phone when they're 4 or 5 years older. It's there, isn't it? And exactly, the childhood is very, very short now. But that's why it's so important to try and, like I said, not to let these kids just sit on their Xboxes. And you've got to get them out there, get them out in the fresh air, get them moving. And that's why I really feel our parents should be accountable for more. You know, it is up to us. It's easy to sit there and moan about them, but, you know, you've got to do that. You've got to get up and get the kids out.
Come back finally again to the whole getting the kids into sport, getting them into the boxing, getting them into the gym. Have you any understanding, James, about why might that, why, like in the case of the fellas who were headed the wrong road and now they're representing the gym and they're going to change their lives, how come a gym and a coach works when police intervention doesn't?
Police intervention. I mean, what we think about police enforcement really is not, you got to tackle the root causes of why people become, you know, like involved in knife crime and violent crime. Why did it become involved in that in the first place? So police is there, you know, some of it's a great system, the rehabilitation programs, the this, the that, but that's the aftermath, isn't it? I mean, that's the end result. Like, we've got to be nipping these things in the bud. We've got to be tackling the root causes. And that's why the gym is that piece of the puzzle at the beginning, you know, because like I said about being the physical counseling, being the, you know, giving them more opportunities around like-minded people, that social integration, you know, the police isn't the answer. That's the result of them. That's the result of the crime, you know?
Yeah. And is it that the gym, the boxing, the sport, it gives them something to focus on, something to grow with, rather than growing with a gang with a knife in your hand running around after bags of drugs?
Yes, certainly. I mean, boxing, you know, it just happens to be obviously great for stress busting and mentally and physically, you know, a great way to release aggression. So that helps as well, obviously, releasing endorphins. We're all controlled by hormones. So, you know, when you get those feel-good hormones flowing from any sport, that's you, isn't it? You're not longer, you're not sitting there with anxiety and depression and, you know, you have next pick-me-up from drugs or alcohol or, you know, you're getting those feel-good hormones into you. That's why sport is fantastic.
I'm very glad that we got in touch with you, because Andrew, who contacted us, told us about what you'd managed to achieve over there. And like you said, you yourself say, well, it might only be a handful, but it's a handful of lads whose path you've managed to change. James, it's fantastic work that you're doing. Do you ever get home to Cork these days?
Yeah, 12 months. I'm home quite regularly. Before lockdown, I go home as much as I can, to be honest. I've got a little regular flight slot on a distance at the Cork flight. So, yeah, there's nothing like I arrive about 9:30 morning back to Toker. So I ring my mum in the airport and she's already putting on the old Clonakilty sausages and pudding. So I do miss that. But I'm stocked up over here. The way I order online. So I don't go short of Barry's tea and breakfast, that's for sure.
Listen, it is great talking to you, James.
Thanks, PJ. Thank you very much.
And thanks for taking our call.
No worries at all. Take care. Bye-bye now.
Lovely fella. We actually stayed talking for longer than that. Cork's 96 FM.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.